The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, broadcasting live from our studios in New York City, streaming live over the video, so you can watch today's show by going to progressiveradionetwork.com or GaryKnoll.com. Today is a two-hour program. Many of you, WPFW in Washington, and we have dozens of stations all over the United States. They're called terrestrial stations, meaning they're regular radio stations. They generally carry 1 hour, but today we have a two-hour program. No guests during our first hour because you'll have a chance to call in and ask questions, share your thoughts on different commentaries. I like to get your feedback. In our second hour, we have a really heavyweight Conversation with Remarkable Minds continuing series. We've done more than 100 programs interviewing more than 100 of the finest minds on the planet. With rare exception, you never see these individuals interviewed anywhere. For a couple good reasons. A, because they're fiercely independent and would not automatically align with the prevailing political or ideological view of the host of a show. And you never want to ask someone a question that you don't know already the answer. And with these people, you don't know the answer. Today's guest is Professor Amit Goswami. Now, many of you might have seen him in several of my films. He is also central to the new film I'm doing, Death by Medicine. And that film is going well. We worked on it. I was working until 4 o'clock this morning on that to try to make a deadline. We even have a full orchestra doing the music for it. We've never done that before in any film, but I believe it deserves it. He is a man who has such unique insights, such powerful dynamic of thought, that I asked him, talk about quantum activism. You've probably never heard the term quantum activism. Applying the insights of quantum physics into understanding the clash of paradigms and aligning our thoughts to constructive positive change. Why would I want this topic discussed with such a person? He also was What the Bleep and Down the Rabbit Hole. He was the star of those films. Because I believe that right now only a very small fraction of the American population has come to grips with how serious our living conditions are. I have shared many times what I call waiting for Katrina. Waiting for Katrina is that phenomena where people wait for something to happen without actively doing something to change the outcome of that or how it will impact them. I just saw yesterday on the news where there's new fires in California and they've destroyed many homes. Without exception, each one of the people when interviewed said they lost everything. Once again, you knew fires were in your area. You knew you lived in an extremely vulnerable position. Why didn't you take your most valuable possessions, rent a trailer, and take them to a rental storage? They would have been protected. Those don't burn. They're made out of concrete or metal. Why didn't you pack up the things you really need? Your clothes, all your important paperwork, your financial records, and put them in a car and have them there when you know that you are in a precarious position. But they didn't do it. And we see time and again people don't do this. So I see us now looking at a government that is out of control. And I'm sorry to break this to many people on the right and the left, but you're both supporting a totalitarian regime. And it's been totalitarian for a long time. The first president to authorize taking a person without due process and rendering him to another country where they can be tortured and any information extracted was Bill Clinton, followed through with George Bush, and now is continuing unabated by Barack Obama. We refuse as a society to see the limitations or weaknesses in the people that we surround ourselves with, the institutions we're a part of, until there comes a major and dramatic, more often than not, tipping. And it's the same with our health. I can't tell you how many times in my life I have sat with members of my own family suggesting, as much as I could, you're smoking, you're drinking, you're eating, you're being overweight, is going to hurt you. There's no good outcome to this. Oh, Gary, you're just being negative. Oh, Gary, you know, you got to realize moderation all things. Moderation all things. I had on the news just before I came down to the studio, and there was a reporter on Fox saying, well, yeah, this new study, and she was talking with a OGBYN, yeah, it shows that artificial sweeteners in these sodas can increase a woman's risk of premature birth, which, by the way, puts the baby at risk and causes a lot of death, by 37%. Well, gee whiz, you're taking all the fun out of it if we can. The commentator says, you mean we got to give up sugar? Well, no, you don't have to give up sugar. But remember, moderation in all things. Oh, good, moderation in all things. What does moderation in all things mean? Is anything less toxic because it's taken in moderation? One part per billion of mercury that goes into your teeth or into a vaccine is enough to cause neurons to die. And yet in a vaccine, we get 24 micrograms. Do you realize the percentage of destruction that that does in the brain? Then when we take that approach, moderation, it's just a moderate amount of, you know, toxins. Well, why don't you ask yourself this? What if someone said, I'm going to give you a moderate beating. I'm going to lie to you moderately. I'm going to betray you moderately. I'm going to steal from you moderately. I'm not going to take everything in your house. I'm not going to take your couch and your bed. But I'll take your jewelry, your money, your gold, silver, your laptop computer, and any papers, credit cards. But that's moderate compared to everything you've got. I'm not going to stab you. I'm not going to shoot you. I'm not going to put your eyes out. So I'm going to give you a moderate beating. I'm just going to knock your teeth out. I'm going to punch your jaw. I'm going to break your ribs. But it's a moderate beating. Get over it. When you put it into a larger context and you see that politicians are moderately deceptive in everything they do, our media is moderately biased in everything it presents. You can't find me a media in the United States that's not biased, left or right, because you're dealing with human beings who bring their own biases and beliefs into what they do. Give you an example. We have submitted to all 7,000 members of American media and all members of the legislatures information on vaccines and showing and proving, it's not an unsupported argument, that there is no good science behind saying that a vaccine for any given person is safe and effective. That does not exist. And when I originally did the work, I then turned it over to scholars and said, see if I've made an error. Did I overlook something? Did I miss a study? I found 22 studies that are supposed to be the gold standards, but I found they were all terrible studies, all done by industries. And so these people, independent, reviewed and said, no, it is correct. There are no studies that can prove that a given vaccine in individual dose or in combined doses can protect you against any disease and at the same time be safe. But the entire basis of vaccine is based upon safety and efficacy. People don't even think. They go in and say, okay, give me my flu jab or give me... And the nurse, the physician, the pharmacist all assume, yeah, of course it's safer. We wouldn't be giving it to you. But then we have to deal with the reality. All of our institutions have betrayed us for different reasons and at different levels. So my interest is in getting people to wake up, be aware, and become proactive instead of being passive till after something happens and then say, oh, gee, you know, why didn't you tell me? Why didn't we know? So we're going to focus on that in our second hour with a really remarkable man. And you can listen to that over the internet on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Now, time permitting, I'm going to deal with the following issues today. Are our veterans being given deadly cocktails to treat post-traumatic stress disorder? Are pilots taking selective serotonin reuptake inhibiting antidepressants, and what will that do to their judgment when they're flying a plane? Also today, despite WikiLeaks revelations, Congress votes for war funding. What does that tell us about the Democrats? We understand the warmongering among the Republicans. I mean, it's almost inbred. But the Democrats were supposed to go to Washington to get us out of these conflicts. What does it tell us when we fire teachers that we need to give money to warlords that we don't and corrupt administrations in both Iraq and Afghanistan? Also, some of the ways that we could be having healthier, better relationships. I haven't had a chance to deal with that. I will. Let's go to the latest on health and healing. Vitamin D, we know it's good for your skin. We know it's good for your immune system and your eyes and your brain. Here's what else it's good for. According to the American College of Cardiology and the Intermountain Medical Center Heart Institute in Salt Lake City, they say increasing vitamin D can significantly reduce a person's risk of heart disease. They studied more than 9,000 people who were diagnosed with too little vitamin D and found out that those people were at a substantial increased risk for heart disease. Quote, heart disease was significantly lower in this group than among patients who were still deficient in vitamin D. Well, that's good news. Now, this time of year, it's very easy to get your vitamin D. About 45 minutes of exposure over half your body will more than give that to you. Separately, this is the study I was referring to that I actually saw. I heard it in the news and I went out and got the actual study. And here's what it says. Diet soda linked to premature birth. New studies are suggesting there's a link between premature births and regular consumption of artificially sweetened soft drinks. They examined 60,000 pregnant women, and that's what they came up with. And you have a 38% higher rate if you've had just one diet soda per day compared to women who had none. Even more alarming, they found that women who had four diet sodas per day had an 80% higher risk of giving premature birth than a soda without any artificial sweeteners in it. Now you think, well, okay, one, is that a moderate amount? There's comes back to my argument. How many people would say, I only drink one can a day? That's moderate. Yeah, and you just increase your risk if you're pregnant by 30% of having a premature birth, which means you're going to put your baby at risk of dying and malformation of the brain, etc. So, stay away from all artificially flavored anything. And if that poor woman, the newscaster I saw saying, but you're taking away all of our fun. Friend, if that's the best way you can find fun by tasting an artificially sweetened beverage, your life is way too limited. Two-thirds of women face orgasm problems. Now, this is something I haven't seen in the media for a while. University Medical Center of New Jersey. And it says the following. Dysfunction rose with age in all categories except orgasm. And orgasm, the greatest group of women having the most problem, were women 18 to 30, reporting orgasm problems, significantly higher than women 31 to 54. Now, here's my first question of the day, and this is for the men and women in this audience. Why do you believe that other sexual problems increase? For example, lack of arousal, lack of desire, lack of lubrication, problems achieving orgasm, lack of satisfaction, and pain during intercourse. Those are problems a lot of women have. I deal with a lot of women who have lack of lubrication and pain because during menopause, the mucous membranes in the vagina thin out. And literally, even the slightest movement or friction can cause bleeding. And with that comes lesions. And that comes infections. So a lot of partners who no longer have been able to have normal intimate relations because the woman ends up really badly affected. And you get an infection in the vagina that can spread throughout the body. And that was one of the criteria in our menopausal health study group, which was a clinical study. And I've done over 45 clinical studies that are medically supervised, where a group of women, over 247 women, had over 40 different measurements that they were reporting on. For example, energy, do you have more or less? Sleep, more or less, or better sleep, less sleep? Muscle strength, hair growth, hair coloration, skin tightness or sagging, aging spots, bladder infections, incontinence, loss of libido, hot flashes, night sweats, weight gain without extra eating. Those are just some of the conditions that women experience at differing degrees when they go through menopause. Now remember, you don't just go into menopause unless you've had a hysterectomy. You go through premenopause, then menopause, then postmenopause. And by the way, you can still become pregnant in premenopause. We have this very foolish notion, because you no longer have your period, you can't get pregnant. Absolutely not true. That's one of the worst stupid myths. You can become pregnant. Absolutely. So a lot of women stop using barrier methods or birth control thinking, well, I can't get pregnant. Oh yeah, you can. Now, it depends upon the woman, and it depends upon the level of stress in her life, because the cortisol that you release when you're stressed can increase the conditions that we call menopausal symptoms. And therefore, a de-stressing program is essential to that. Anyhow, we found that those women who stuck with the protocol were able to reduce all of their menopausal symptoms and premenopausal symptoms and postmenopausal symptoms by almost 95%. And some women went from postmenopause several years to premenopause. That's never been done before, but we had five women who did it. And the oldest one was 67. And I'll bet that's never happened before. In any case, very few women over the age of 54 were able to experience normal sexual relations without physical problems. But then there are protocols that help relubricate, help strengthen the mucous membranes, help allow the tissues to reflush, help a natural pH, help natural, normal, and healthy bacteria to coexist, to colonize. All these things that the average guy doesn't want to hear about, grosses him out. But if you're a woman, this is your body. There's nothing wrong. You've just got to know what you're faced with so that you don't end up with those problems. So, here's the question I'm asking. Why do you think that women between the ages of 18 and 31 had the highest number reporting problems with orgasm? Our number for you to share your thoughts, 888-874-4888. I will hold off on my own opinion. I'd like to hear from you. 888-874-4888. Interesting, next Friday I'm doing a whole day of filming on five different films. We're building sets for it now over at our studio. And I have a world-renowned panel coming in to talk about the sequel to Sexual Healing, Sacred Sexuality, which I've been filming for about 2 years, but that'll be our final day of filming. And that'll be one of the questions I'll be asking the panel. Reduce hypertension with chocolate, beets, oats, and lavender. Now, we knew that you could lower blood pressure with the polyphenols in chocolate, raw organic coca. Here's the latest on this. And from Melanie Grimes from the Journal of Nutrition, quote, hypertension, also known as high blood pressure, affects about 70 million Americans. High blood pressure causes damage to the blood vessels and eventually can lead to numerous side effects, including heart disease, stroke, kidney failure. That's according to the American Heart Association. home remedies can help lower blood pressure. And here's what you find. High fiber lowers blood pressure. Adding fiber, quote, to the diet helps lower blood pressure. That's according to Journal of Nutrition. It also reduces cardiovascular disease. And a good fiber is whole grains and vegetables. Oats are an excellent source of fiber, as are apples and potatoes. Applesauce and oatmeal are easy to absorb forms of fiber that can help lower blood pressure. By the way, that's also a good morning breakfast. You make your oatmeal, put a lot of cinnamon in there. I mean a lot of cinnamon, because cinnamon is, quite frankly, one of the most powerful antioxidants in the world. And then put your apple juice or applesauce in there and stir it around. Now, beetroot juice lowers blood pressure. This is something that's brand new. It's from Queen's Mary University in London. And it says, published in Journal of Nutrition, it says that researchers have found that fiber lowering blood pressure and reducing the risk of cardiovascular disease, and it did it within 24 hours of consuming beet juice. And the dosage is small. You didn't need a lot of beet juice, about 2 ounces. So for those of you getting your fresh organic beet juice along with celery and other things, good for you. Also, dark chocolate lowers blood pressure. In this study, in fact, there were 15 separate studies in the peer-reviewed literature showing that dark chocolate lowers blood pressure. And, quote, those who consume one chocolate bar a week reduce their risk of a stroke and dying by 22%. One healthy, nutritious chocolate bar a week, and you reduce your chance of a stroke by 22%? That's terrific. And two more things. Potassium. I'm suggesting 500 milligrams of potassium. Now, if you're taking your vegetable juices each day and fruit juices, you're going to get about 300 milligrams. So you don't need a whole lot of supplement after that. But in this one, potassium lowers blood pressure and can be found in many foods, especially bananas. By the way, that's not the best source. And also in currants, that's good. And but you need a lot more than 500 to lower the blood pressure. I'm saying that's what you should have on a regular basis. I might suggest 1,000, 2,000 milligrams of potassium, depending upon how high a person's blood sugar is. And finally, lavender oil massage lowers blood pressure. Researchers at Creighton University have found that a massage with lavender oil lowers blood pressure. The oil can be applied, massage, or you can put it in hot water bath. Put like 6 drops out of a dropper of lavender oil in your bath, and that's enough to help lower your blood pressure. Also, dried lavender can be consumed as a tea, or you can even put the dried lavender in your bath water also. And by the way, lavender is easy to grow. You can grow it on your own windowsill. Smells great. It's an aromatic. In fact, all around my home in Florida, I have aromatic plants. They're night bloomers. Ginger, lavender, lilac, honeysuckle, and rose. I have 73 different types of roses I planted. So during at night, with the windows open, you get this wonderful series of smells coming through from about 7 at night till 7 in the morning. And then in the daytime, you don't smell anything because they're not releasing their pheromones. And finally, before we go to our first break, from Science Daily, this is Mainstream Science, Brigham Young University, they found that a short list that predicts a person's odds of dying or living, relationships that improve your life. Here's what it says, and this is from PLOS Medicine, which is a peer-reviewed journal, and the British, Brigham Young University professors, they report that social connections, meaning friends, family, neighbors, and colleagues, improve our odds of surviving by 50%. And here's how the low social interaction compares to more well-known risk factors, equivalent to smoking 15 cigarettes a day, equivalent to being an alcoholic, more harmful than not exercising, and twice as harmful as obesity. That's what happens when you don't have a relationship, or not just an interpersonal relationship. That's good if it's a quality one. And what makes it equality? Not constantly arguing, no manipulation, no using, but sharing the best of yourself. And I'll deal with that on not today, but possibly in my second hour, depending upon how long my conversation with Professor Amit Goswami goes. In other countries, when I traveled all over the world to see why were people living longer, and I studied thousands of people all over, I then worked up a chart, and here's what my chart said. That if you have a perfect diet, flawless, you eat everything you're supposed to eat, organic, locally grown, the right combination, and you take the right supplements, you've got 25% going for you. If you exercise exactly the amount you should on a daily basis, and you de-stress, you have 25% going for you. The quality of your environment that you live in is 10%. If you did all that right, you got 60% out of 100. But what if your disease is advanced? What if it's at 70? Then it's a mathematical equation that you're never going to be able to do enough to interfere with the disease process. So something else was allowing people around the world to live longer and happier lives in the United States. And I finally determined that was quality of relationships. And that represented 40%. But reverse this aspect. Let's say you have no vitamins, and you don't exercise a great deal, and you smoke, but you have a high quality relationship, so they're everywhere in your life, you still have more going for you than the person who eats a lot of health food, but doesn't have quality relationships. But what if you put it all together? Then you're going to live a long, happy life. So that's an equation. I'll go into that in greater depth on an upcoming program. But now this study shows it. That's right on the mark. So I'm happy to see that. Because I did my study in 1974. They're just getting around to it today. Back in a moment with your comments, and we'll take your calls at 888-874-4888. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a call now. Let's go over and say hello to Paul from Staten Island. Hi, Paul.
Yeah, hi, Gary.
Yeah.
You know, the Puritan ethic, I think, had many positive things, the fidelity and the work ethic. But I think the one negative side was that it created a lot of guilt, especially in women with sex, and also the inability to just let go and enjoy life and enjoy things. You know, just enjoy the moment of an experience.
All right. You've made three points that let us focus for a moment on. That the Puritan ethic was an ethic that did not allow individuals to live a quality of life, because they had to maintain certain standards, especially women. That is correct. They were supposed to find the meaning of their life through their suffering. In fact, many of them came because of religious persecution in Europe, especially if they were Lutheran. If you remember, I've talked extensively about the history of Martin Luther and what he brought and the positive and negative within his own lifetime, and how many people died because of shifting over to wanting to have more freedom of religion and not having to go to the priest or to go to a nun or go to a church even to find their connection with God, but rather to find it within themselves. And he was the great liberator of that kind of theology, where otherwise the Catholic Church, which was the major church in Europe and controlled virtually all of a person's beliefs, and they also controlled the laws. You had, even though you had Rome, you also had, and you had the Pope, you also had the Emperor, and you had a dual loyalty to the state, which was supposed to dictate the laws, but the church, which actually wrote the laws. So if you did something that was considered immoral or unethical, you had to pay twice, once to the local tributes and then to the church. And the church determined how much suffering was permissible. And the more austere the existence, the ascetic existence, like John the Baptist, living and the Essenes, living a very austere existence, not having anything that would be considered frivolous, and not having any real pleasure in your life. Your pleasure was considered that you were sinful, that your whole life was to suffer in this life to gain some form of pleasure in the next life. But it was supposed to be a spiritual pleasure, not a physical pleasure. And almost always, any physical pleasure was considered a sin. Therefore, the priests and others and those who lived by the church's creeds would wear, in the summertime, wool and sleep in burlap. Imagine there was no air conditioning, no fans, and it was hot then as it is hot now. So if you had a hot summer night, you'd be sweating completely, and you'd have bed bugs because people frequently only clean their house once a year, and that was in the spring. And that's when everyone got married. And one of the reasons people got married in June bride, is because in May, the waters would be warm enough that people would take their annual bath. And therefore, the reason you had bouquets was because the bouquets would be having a scent, and the pheromones would allow a person's body odors not to be very strong, because everybody'd be smelling the flowers. And if you didn't have a bouquet, then you would get a little container you put around your neck, and inside that would be lavender or something else that had a nice smell to it. And when perfumes came in, everybody would get some kind of perfume and throw the perfume all over them. It was not uncommon for people to wear the same clothes for 6 or 7 months at a time. And you know, the whole idea of that, when you were first married, you should smell your best, because you'd never smell good after that. And that's why the newlyweds would enjoy their clean smells, because, you know, they had a bath after a year. Also, when they took the baths, the baths were taken in order of the oldest man, then the oldest son, then the mother, then the daughter, and then finally the baby. And that's why they said, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And when people were considered dirt poor, it was dirt poor because the poor people could not afford wooden floors or slate floors. They had dirt, and so you were dirt poor. And remember the comment, don't have a piss to pot in, pot to piss in? Well, that is because urine was used for dyeing and for cleaning. And by the way, that went back to the Roman Empire. So you got each week, the urine would be collected in a house and then given to the person that would take it and use it in their cleaning. But a lot of people were too poor, hence the notion you don't have a pot to piss in. And then, I'm not going to go through all the different things of history to show you, but understand that it's in that mindset of being poor, having very little, living under the worst of circumstances, and then you had to have some rationale for this existence. So what a person would be told is, look, the more you suffer in this lifetime, the greater your liberation in the next one. And so people then went out of their ways to give themselves even less comfort than what they had. For example, many priests and nuns would not walk someplace, they would crawl. And some would flagellate themselves. They would take a form of a whip and beat themselves across the back. If you were to take the shirt off people in, let's say, the 14th, 15th, 16th, 17th centuries, you would find massive scarring and infections. And in fact, some would actually beat themselves and then have an assistant or someone rub salt into the wounds. Now, you've heard the notion rubbing salt into the wound? That's where that comes from. Because the salt is going to create massive pain. They could have put honey on there and done much better. The salt actually creates scarring. Anyhow, that's the mindset that came over to America. So what you will not find, you will absolutely not find that. You will not find people going out of their way to create pleasure time in the pioneers, in the early pilgrims. Instead, they were very pious. They believed in, yes, they believed in values, providing that it's their values, but not yours. They believed in tolerance, providing it's tolerance for their own. And generally, they lived in isolated villages where anyone who wanted to believe in that particular thought lived with them. But in all these areas, no matter where you were in the Americas, a woman could never identify pleasure with sex, ever. In fact, women were supposed to lay there, close their eyes, turn their head to the side until the man had finished. The whole idea was the conception. And some took it so literally that the only time they were allowed to have sex was when they were procreating for the purpose of sex. And the Catholic Church was behind that. And by the way, don't let anyone, any priest or anyone tell you that celibacy was, you know, one of the early church's doctrines. It was not. And I'll be happy to debate anyone who thinks they're a religious scholar, and I'll show you popes, and I'll show you the early Catholic writings that being married was completely acceptable. But anyhow, that's just part of the whole nonsense of religious doctrine. You can make up anything you want as long as you get people to believe you, then it becomes the law. Now take that clear down through the whole idea that any time a woman exercised her opinion, exercised her power, exercised her right, then that was considered a threat to the dominant hierarchy within the tribe, the clan, the family, the relationship. And so women who then complained were warned that they would suffer from womb fury. And it got so bad that womb fury, or hysteria, became an official medical diagnosis. So if you were argumentative or depressed, or you couldn't sleep at night and kept your husband awake, then the doctor would diagnose you with hysteria. And the most common medical procedure for hysteria was removing a woman's ovaries. And throughout America, you would go into people's homes, and on their mantle would be a little jar with formaldehyde, and in it would be ovaries. So they could brag, we are hysteria-free in this household. And that was a mark of gee whiz, you know, these are very, you know, serious people. Go back and look at all the pictures, not just Ansel Adams' pictures, but all the pictures going back to the Civil War and forward when photography was used. How many people do you ever see smiling? You don't. Because you were taken seriously only if you were serious. So there was no pleasure. So let's, the first time in American history, the pleasure as a universal right to an entire generation occurred in the 1960s. Therefore, pleasure became the dominant theme, and that threatened the conservative religious movements and conservative political movements. And that's why there was an immediate attack against anybody that wanted to enjoy pleasure. Oh, you're one of these pleasure guys, pleasure women. And then with that came all the negative connotations.
Can I ask something, Gary?
Yeah.
I was going to make that point, too. It seemed to be the 60s became a 360 in the opposite direction, where, you know, pleasure becomes everything and the other stuff gets thrown out with the bathwater, as you say. So how do you have a balance? There seems to be a dichotomy between pleasure and no sacrifice and no spiritual work, and all spiritual work and no pleasure.
Okay, well, that's a good question. I thank you for asking that, Paul. First, what we deny, we cannot change. So if we deny that our life is lived out of balance, how can you bring balance? You cannot, because all you've done is you have denied your opposite. So if you are overweight, you've denied the part of you that has not been balanced in making the right choices of eating and exercise. We confuse external realities with our inner truths. So if we look around us and everyone's dressing a certain way, eating a certain way, if every kid is twittering, then if that's the external reality, what about our inner truth? What if we say, I don't want to do that? What if everyone else is eating hamburgers and now bigger hamburgers and monster hamburgers and bacon on the hamburgers, you know, and cheese on the bacon and eggs on the cheese? And so you end up with something that, you know, you look at it and suddenly your whole head becomes a pimple. And that's because we then confuse my internal, do I really need that? Do I want that? How am I going to feel? What's it going to do to me? That's the internal truth. Now, internal truth is the only reality we have that is sustainable. But external realities is, well, he's got a car, I want a car. He's got an apartment, I want a bigger apartment. I don't want to live here, I want to live there. Because, look, and then suddenly, our whole life no longer is in balance, and we're no longer allowed to make the right choice because we've confused inner truths, which is what we should live by, and external realities. If the external realities are that if a woman is nothing more than an object of a man's desire, then at some level, depending upon the strength of her character, her ability to connect with those women who have liberated the woman's mind, it's not the body that must be liberated. The body is merely the vehicle. When you're having good sex, 90% of all good sex is in the mind. 10% is in the body. Why do you think that people who are creative, why do you think couples that are creative with their imagination never get boring when it comes to sex? And people who have beautiful bodies and no minds or imaginations, everything, you lose your interest very quickly because you've limited it to the objectification of what the body experiences. And that wears out very quickly. There's only so much interest, so much originality, so much creativity when you see the same body do the same body. But the mind is endless in its capacity to create and share in a positive way. Now, you could take that same notion to everything else. The person that does work and that may be boring in and of itself, but their imagination doesn't allow them to be bored and doing boring work. There was a woman artist, a poet, during Mao Zedong, who was an absolute criminal and destroyed tens of millions of own countrymen and destroyed millions of ancient Chinese documents and anything reminding him of the Confucian and the Taoist parts of Chinese history. And he wanted everything to be purely utilitarian. And my God, I mean, it was so bad. If you saw a play, it was like a bunch of little soldiers goose-stepping across the stage. Nothing was done right during the Chinese Cultural Revolution. In any case, nor during Stalinism either. In any case, this woman was arrested because she was an artist, and almost all artists and liberal thinkers, progressives, were all arrested, put in these internment camps. And she had it really rough. She was bound to a chair for 7 years. Isolated confinement. No one could speak to her, and she saw no one for 7 years. But when she got out, she wrote a beautiful book. And in that beautiful book, not a single thought about her being in prison, confined to a chair, tied. And when asked, how did you write something so beautiful coming from that torture? She said, because each day they held my body, they cannot hold my mind. So I live my life in my mind each day as if I were completely free. That is strength of character. That is what liberates people. Hope that answers your question, Paul.
Thank you.
All the best to you. And remember, my program, television program, is shown every week on Staten Island Cable, as it is on Bronx Cable, Manhattan Cable, Brooklyn Cable. Go to Gary Noll and you can see that. And we're going to talk with some other people. Russell from New Jersey, Edward from Hawthorne, Bob from Canada. Why do I have all these things going on? Women, where are you? I ask the question out there. We'll come back to you all in a moment. Let's go into our studio in New York City. We're standing by. We have Bill Thompson and Kara Lee. Nice to have you both in studio today.
Thank you. Thank you.
Just one quick thing before we go to your issues. I am shifting over completely the health products that I'm creating. I'm discontinuing a lot of products because I cannot afford to keep them in inventory because of what I see as being the future. That's my projection. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I don't believe I'm wrong. I believe that what I see going on in society, we're going to have a really bumpy road ahead. But I'm improving certain products, taking them to another level. So some of your most favorite or the most popular products will not disappear. They'll just come back starting next week in a better format. than anyone's ever created before. But also, I'm going to be eliminating all my inventory now. I'm just getting it out to make room. We're going from like 350 products down to 50 products, so a lot of stuff's going. And so what I'm doing is to get rid of all the current products that are on sale, including green stuff and greens and grains in its current formula. It's 70% off. So wow. People want to take advantage. We're almost out. I think we have something like 40 or 50 bottles left, and then they're gone. And it may be a week before we can announce anything new, but that's all right. Call and get a 70% discount on some of these products. And this is your last time, last offer of the summer. Okay? 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. They're phenomenal products. They're kosher, Circle K kosher. They're great. But they're no longer. They will never be. That formula is gone. Okay? And new stuff is coming. All right? And stuff that no one has ever created before anywhere in the world. I've been working for 2 years on this. And where fewer is better. And you'll only know what I'm talking about when you see what's coming at you. So 877-627-5065, great way to save because it's below my cost, but I'm cleaning it out. So that's that. Now we'll start with you, Bill.
Good morning, good afternoon. Yesterday, you began to answer, how do you prevent success from causing harm? How do you work with success, which is so often leads to failure? I see so many people, they make a fortune, they do this, and suddenly they tumble down. And you say, what is wrong with these people?
All right. I began to answer this question yesterday. I asked Carol Lee, did you want a historical or a philosophical answer? She said historical, so I just pulled someone out of the air. I pulled Bob Evans, you know, the right. famous producer. The things he did right because of his Midas touch. And for years, he did it right. He was a nice guy. He didn't do drugs. He kept his eye on the ball. Chinatown and The Godfather and Rosemary's Baby and The Love Story. And you had all these hits that he did. And each one of those represented a unique way of bringing something that did not exist as a genre into the marketplace in ways that no one had done before. Then he got himself on drugs, cocaine, and he lost his way. Then he started going out to all the parties, and he started to think that it was all about him. And he just self-destroyed. All right. Now I'll make it personal. I'll answer the question from my own dynamic. When I first came to New York, I got off a bus with $12, didn't know anyone. 2 years later, I was living in a little small apartment up on Weston Avenue. And a guy who I met in a writer's meeting was successful. He was considered the success. He had 7 novels published, and he made a lot of money. And when he would invite people to go to his apartment, it was a big apartment. It was nice. And more of the conversation that I heard from him over the next year or two was about he needed a bigger apartment, he was going to move up to the country, up into the Woodstock area. It was all about what he was going to do with the money that he made. And I asked him one time, I said, look, I said, what happens when the bestsellers stop, the money stops? He said, well, you know, I got one of the best editors. I don't think it's going to. I said, but what if it does? And I'll never forget this day because we were sitting over at the Soldiers and Sailors Memorial on Riverside Drive at 91st Street, where I used to go every day and do my writing. And I'd take my daughter Shelley down to the playground, and she'd sit and play with all the other kids, and I'd sit there and do my writing. I'd write on my notepads longhand. And then when I had my first best-selling book, and he says, where are we going to celebrate? And I said, well, come over, and I'll make dinner for you and your wife. And no, go out a restaurant. You got to go. I said, I don't need to go to a restaurant to celebrate. I said, he said, why not? Aren't you going to move out of here? I said, no, why should I move out of here? I took a different approach, and what I said was, you and your wife are now in crisis. Look where you're at. Look at your expenses. You're under stress to keep producing another hit. So whatever sales you had the last time, you and your agent asked for more money this time, and now you have to sell more books next time. And what if there's no next time? Now, if you would sell 20,000 books, that's considered a really nice hardback run. But now you've gotten such a big advantage, you've got to sell 100,000 books. What if you sell 60,000? If that was your first book, someone would say, wow, you just sold 60,000 books. Great for you. Now they're going to say, you disappointed, just let us down. I said, you're digging a pit down. He didn't listen. 2 years later, he was unemployed and ultimately lost his apartment, lost his house, and ended up moving up to... He had to move from Woodstock, where he had a house, into New Paltz, and he became a school bus driver.
No.
Yeah, and was miserable. And one time I met him on the street, and he said to me, you were right. I said, I don't like being right about this. I said, you stopped being a friend, too. He said, well, I stopped being a friend because I was embarrassed. Because how many times you said, don't take it seriously. So a couple things. First and foremost, for everyone, no matter what your career, whether it's as an artist, a writer, owning your own business, first and foremost, never allow success to be an issue in anything you do. Don't even allow it to exist. Just be matter-of-fact about it. Secondly, don't personalize it. If people like you because you're famous, it's only because you're famous. If people can't like you if you're not famous, then you shouldn't be around the people who like you because you are. So the real people in life that you should be with are the people who like you because you're just likable. You're a nice person, and they enjoy being in your presence. If they only like you because of what you can do for them, or the image that they get by basking in your success, then you're around the wrong people. Secondly, live conservatively, meaning you don't need a big house or a car, bling or gold to live a good and quality life. The things that are meaningful in life, quality relationships, love of other people, the love you have for nature and animals, those things don't cost. So I don't care how poor you are, you can still enjoy a sunny day, a walk in the park. It doesn't matter what house you go back to, apartment you go back in, the size of the apartment. It's the walk that counts. So stop thinking that success in anything is really only relevant to what it can get you in the next step up. So if you don't look at the next step up, then you accept where you're at, and therefore you're not always coveting something else. I'll be happy, I'll slow down when I have, when I earn, when I'm acknowledged. Then you no longer have an authentic life. We only have this moment, Bill, and what are we doing with it? When you realize that other people have a right to the life that they want, and you recognize what is sacred within the person, then they don't have to be rich, successful, or achieved in order for you to have that relationship or friendship with them. Therefore, you do not artificially separate out people because of their wealth or standing in the world, which we do today.
It's so true.
I'll give you an example of that in a moment, because we're going to go off from WMYE. But before we go off from MYE, tomorrow, Bill and I are going down to Philadelphia to interview hundreds of the teabag people. If anyone in this audience wants to join us, because I'd like to get many people coming there, Bill, to interview people, not on film. Give me your phone number.
My phone number is 800-326-5661. 800-326-5661. That is my personal cell phone number.
And what we're going to do, we're going to interview people non-judgmentally. We're going to listen to what they have to say, and I'm going to write out a series of questions I would like people to ask them, like, what do you believe in? What are you for? What are you against? And I'll write down things. Are you willing to take away the funding for about 70% of the military-industrial complex? Are you willing to get out of Afghanistan and Iraq? Are you willing to challenge Israel's right to invade, and we to support them in invading Iran, which is inevitable, which is going to cause World War III? Are you willing to acknowledge the needs of the poor And are you willing to acknowledge the needs for universal health coverage? Well, I'm going to write a whole series of questions. I'm just interested to see what their feedback is.
Right.
Now, I can interview about 300 people because when I'm interviewing people, a lot of people get together in small groups, about 5 or 10 people,
right,
and I'll get their feedback. But if we have 10 or 15 other people in Philadelphia tomorrow, it starts at noon, goes to 3.
You get the Independence Mall.
Independence Mall, which is easy to get to.
Yeah, it's 5th and Market. Or you come across the bridge, it's right there.
Yeah, and or you just take a train down.
Oh, that's the best thing. Take the train down to 30th Street Station, and then you can take the bus right over to Independence Mall.
Yeah, it's only an hour and a half. Or we'll try to carpool for those who want to drive down.
Right.
And it's a short drive down and drive back. But at least what we're going to do is on Sunday evening's program, I'm going to have people tell us what they learned.
Sure.
Because I believe that right now the Tea Party movement is in complete chaos. I believe that the mercenaries are finally showing their hand. The Sarah Palins and the Republicans are trying to usurp it. And the problem is that's self-evident. But the Democrats and liberals have tried to besmirch the entire movement and
right,
everyone in it. They're wrong in doing that. So my interest is in seeing what the different minds are thinking, so we get a better handle. So if we're able to interview 500 or 600 people, that's a pretty good sampling of different people, different ages, different ethnic backgrounds, and then we can come to some much more, I believe, objective understandings of them, so that we do not let this phenomena just be battered back and forth between the two ruling ideologies, both of which are corrupt.
Correct.
So that's tomorrow. So we're going to leave. What time are we leaving here?
Well, you should really leave here by 10 in the morning. That should get you down there by noontime. You don't have to be there exactly at noon. There's nothing that says you have to be there at noon. The event is from 12 to 3 at Independence Mall. It's being sponsored by an organization called Unity, UNI-TEA.com. And you'll see me there, Bill Thompson and Gary. Look for it as many people as like to.
I'm not filming anyone tomorrow. I'm merely asking questions, and I'm asking questions non-judgmentally, because one of the most important things we can do in life is to stay non-judgmental until we have whatever insights and information that we're looking for, then make our decision from that. Unfortunately, in our society, more often than not, people make their decision and then selectively look for support for that decision, excluding anything that is not in alignment with that. And I feel that that limits us as human beings. And hence we end up with the volatility of the rights and the lefts. Well, life is not right and left. Life today, for most people, is up and down. And people believe that if they're up, to finish off my final thought on that, every day, or every Sunday, I go to Center Park to help people learn how to race walk and to jog and run. And a person last week saw me there and came over and says, Gary, no, I've seen you here for decades. I said, yeah. He says, man, why do you do this? I said, well, I'm here to, you know, help people. He says, yeah, but you don't see anyone else who's well-known out here, best-selling authors and radio and television and documentary, all the stuff you do. I said, I won't allow myself to be limited or think that somehow because I've achieved a certain level of success that it makes me better.
Right.
I accept my difference on issues, but I absolutely refuse to acknowledge that on any level I'm a better person.
Right.
Therefore, what I want to share is what is spiritual and human in all people. So the person coming to learning power walking can be a Democrat, a Republican, a priest, or an atheist. That is irrelevant to me, because those are merely beliefs that we bring into our being, our mind. Those are conditioned beliefs. Some can be more balanced than others. But what if we all start excluding people who are not exactly like us? Then who's left?
Yeah.
And that's also true. All the people I know who were successful at something, at some point, whatever it may have been, and today are not, more often than not, the reason they're no longer successful and broken down and beaten up emotionally is because they made the mistake of taking their success seriously. Again, never take success
Correct.
Seriously.
Right.
Don't exploit it. Don't abuse it. Don't use it.
First Just, sign of failure is believing your own press.
And don't. And by the way, I want to thank all of the people who've been watching the U.S. government to our American vets drop dead.
Oh,
yes. A six-part series that's on YouTube. As of right now, 55,000 different blogs and websites are carrying it, including Veterans Today, Florida Daily, Ron Paul's site, the Daily News out of Dallas, the Tennessean, the Times of India, which is one of the largest publications in the world, Uncensored.com, Daily Life, Alex Jones Prison Planet, Global Research Center. But we have 55,000 separate sites, and we believe that the films have been seen by a little over 50 million people.
Worldwide. That's
worldwide.
Amazing.
50 million. And it's the guy in Dallas, or the guy in Florida who I filmed, the vet,
yes.
He's now getting about 3,000 calls and emails a day, every day, and he's now getting donations, and he's getting the land, and I'm designing a camp where there'll be a medical facility, psychological help, and a family reunion center, plus barracks and dining hall and a gym, so that when a vet comes back, before entering into society, they can get the type of input and help that they need,
right.
So that they don't end up on the streets, they don't end up abusing themselves or someone else, they don't end up alcoholic or drug addict. And right now, 845,000 vets per year are homeless.
Wow.
It's a disgrace. I'm bringing attention to this. I want to thank all these people for reading it, watching it, and passing on. There are two articles now, and there are now 12 videos up. 12. So please watch them and send them to everyone on your Facebook.
This is on YouTube?
On YouTube.
YouTube.com/GaryNullTV?
Yes.
YouTube.com/GaryNullTV. Got it.
Right. And then in a month from now, I'm putting up the other ones that I'm filming. Even later today, I'm filming in... Sunday I'm filming The New Poor. I'm continuing that one. That'll be the next series. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
Kara Lee, before we go to our guest who's standing by, and my guest in just a moment, you're going to hear from Professor Amit Goswami. He is a part of our conversations with Remarkable Minds. He is a theoretical nuclear physicist and a professor emeritus at the University of Oregon's Institute for Theoretical Physics. He received his doctorate at the University of Calcutta, and he's been teaching at Oregon since 1968. He is a multidisciplinary quantum scientist who applies the principles of physics to multiple research areas, the history of paradigm shifts, the new biology and genetics, psychology and medicine, the healing arts. And his book is The Self-Aware Universe. It's been critically acclaimed among the major books addressing the correlation between quantum theory and consciousness. And we're going to talk with him about quantum activism, the very thing that we are doing tomorrow. We're going to go to where a group of activists are,
exactly. And
we're there to talk with the people who are there to see what is their perspective. Why are you here? What are you for? What are you against? What are you going to contribute that will make it a better world, a safer world, a kinder world? And we'll know only when we speak to them. But please, before you accept that someone is something or not, do your homework. Find out for yourself. So we're going to go over to Professor Goswami in just a moment. But first, Carrie, you've been sitting here.
All right. Thanks, Gary. Well, I'll be quick. I just came in here. I have one email from you. It's from an economist in New Mexico. He didn't give his name, but he was wondering if you could write up and put on your site an economic stimulus plan. You were talking about it a couple days ago. He thought it made the most sense that he's heard so far. And he also wants to know if you could put some facts behind your reasoning and outline some of the proof that you have for your plan.
What I can do is this. If you come back in about a half hour, 45 minutes, I'll address your issue specifically on the air. Okay?
Sure. Thanks, Gary.
Good. We'll see you in a bit. Stay tuned. Back in a moment. We have to start the show with our theme song, and then we're over to our guest.